Hi, I'm Josh Calixto.
I'm Katie McCarthy.
And I'm Kyle Cookstow, and this is the Bad End Podcast, a podcast about video games.
So just to introduce myself a little bit more, I'm Josh Calixto. I've written for Killscreen. I do some writing for Glixel. I've written for The Meta. I mostly write about esports, but I obviously play a lot of video games outside of that.
And you're a RollingStone.com writer, correct?
Yes. I've also done some stuff for like New York Magazine and their site Vulture, but yeah, that's about it.
I am also a writer in the video game space. I used to be employed by Killscreen. Now I work for US Gamer. And I've also written for like Waypoint and AV Club and Polygon and a few other just random video game websites here and there. And now I'm an assistant reviews editor for US Gamer.
And I'm Kyle Clickstell again. I used to write for Killscreen, which is, if you're listening, can figure out how we know each other. I make video games, both independently and professionally to some degree, and I also write about them in my spare time. And this podcast exists because we feel like there's a lot to say about video games, there's a lot of stuff that we're playing and people are talking about that we also want to have an opinion on.
So do you have any opinions on video games right now? Do you have any video game opinions, Kyle?
My biggest opinion I've got right now is that Shovel Knight is still really good.
Never played Shovel Knight.
Yeah, I've never played Shovel Knight. Oh, man.
Which is a terrible thing, I feel like, because so many people are like, oh, it's one of the throwback indie whatever fucking platformer things. And I've still never played it, and I feel like I should, because there's really nothing out for the Switch, but, you know.
There's one game out for the Switch that I think we can probably talk about later, but I love the premise of the Switch, because it seems like a platform that is made for independent games to some degree, because the control input methods are super simple and you could choose to kind of go buck wild with it if you want to do like full on motion control stuff. But for a lot of, especially independent games, a lot of them just are, because they're already deploying to PC, they're using very more or less simple like control mechanisms, like a 360 controller or something else. And I don't necessarily want to sit at like my desktop to play whatever small indie game that's interesting to me. I think Shovel Knight is actually a great example of this, of a game that makes a lot of sense to be played on a couch, but is also a game that plays really well as a portable. So I really jumped at the opportunity to buy that on the Switch to play on the toilet, you know, on the couch. while in transit. So yeah, I'm excited for that, and I'm excited that Nintendo really seems to kind of be doubling down on an emphasis on indie games for the Switch, because I do think the platform is copacetic with a lot of indie game values. So, which is to say, though, that I already played Shovel Knight before, and it is still good on the Switch, but I'm just reminded of how much kind of a revelation that game is.
I want to talk... Well, I mean, can you give me the rundown of what is good about Shovel Knight? I don't get it. I really just don't understand it. Having not played it, I'm sure if I played it myself, I would understand, but what's the appeal? Isn't it just like a Nintendo platformer?
I think it's some of that, but I think the first thing that really struck me when I was playing Shovel Knight was that it feels like when you play it, it feels like what you remember those games playing like as a kid. Like especially kind of the whole the world design and the way you move about the level, like very closely mimics how like you traverse like Super Mario 3 or even like Wario Land or kind of those games of that ilk. But when you go back to those reference points, the games are like often a lot less kind of compelling than your like kid brain remembers them. And so playing Shovel Knight, it kind of conjures the same feeling of nostalgia, but doesn't actually kind of rely on you remembering that. And manages to kind of be its own thing, and the fact that it's elevating all of these tenets that were kind of first proposed by the games that it's referencing and takes them to like kind of like a little bit higher level. So you've got like, still, it's a traditional platformer to some degree, but you've got kind of an expanding set of abilities. You've got a stronger sense of bosses and progression. There's like hidden unlockables. The levels get harder. There's like secrets kind of hidden around and sometimes in plain sight. And it feels like very complete as a vision of a thing. And I really appreciate that, especially after coming out of Kickstarter and kind of, I think it might have been like ex-AAA developers making it, but it's like definitely the studio's first game. and for them to kind of put this out and have a very clear vision of what the product was supposed to be was like really refreshing. Just get in there and like it just it controls well, it feels tight. There's kind of like a high, maybe not high, it's like a middle tier skill ceiling for a platformer where there's a lot of things you can do if you just get better at controlling Shovel Knight. And a lot of that kind of becomes more and more available. There's also this weird kind of like vestigial Dark Souls mechanic where you reach checkpoints and levels and you can actually destroy your checkpoints and get more gold for that. But if you die, you drop all your gold. You have to go recover it and you go back to the last checkpoint. But if you destroy all the checkpoints and then you die, you go back to the very start of the level and you have to get all that gold again. So there's a way for you to make the game harder and harder for yourself. So I don't know. It feels really considered and it's like really fun to play and it's just joyous and it's like happy in the best sense. And it's interesting, which is a terrible word to describe something. But
do you have
I really
this game on
it.
Switch or do you have it on Switch or have you been playing it on PC?
I beat it initially on the PC and I bought the like complete edition recently on the Switch that comes with the two new campaigns where you can play as two of the villains.
Doesn't it have co-op on the Switch?
Yeah, I think so. Because that's another thing too, is they've been adding it. No, I haven't played it at all. And I'm really interested to see how that works because I feel like platformer co-op has always been really weird unless like the interaction of two players is core to the mechanics of how the game work. Like the game Chariot, where you're pulling a chariot around, or like Rayman Origins was good at this. But games that like 1001 Spikes, or like what was the other one? New Super Mario Brothers, like where it's more just like chaos of four people going through a level. I'm not sure like where Shovel Knight falls on that. Especially because as far as I know, there's not like any like assistive mechanics or like unlocked features by playing with two people. So yeah. I haven't tried that yet, but I definitely want to.
The thing that I really dig about the Nintendo Switch and that I just keep thinking about is just how it, and this is something that I think hasn't been explored very much, is just the way that it like breaks down the idea of use cases and like the environments in which we play certain genres of video games, because it really colors a lot of our thinking about video games. Like for me, at least, I know I'm not very likely to play puzzle games these days unless it's on my phone, because a puzzle game has like a very specific form factor that I'm willing to play it on. Like I want to play that game on the go. It's not something I want to sit at my computer or really on my TV. I find in a real life scenario, I really don't want to sit down and play like Tetris for 20 minutes. But if it's on my phone, I'll do that when I'm on the train or whatever. In the same way, there's a lot of indie games, like you were saying earlier, that I don't necessarily want to play sitting down at my desk, but that I think would go really well on the Switch. And like, that's what I really like about the Switch, is that it breaks down all of these different genres of games that kind of only make sense or make most sense in a certain environment, and it lets them all coexist in one space, and you can kind of convert it depending on how you want to play the game. And what I'm interested in seeing is if Nintendo can find new ways to change our expectations for what the desired environment is for a certain game to be played, or if that can lead to more inventive, I guess, ways to play games that aren't limited to a certain form factor, a certain environment to be played in.
I've only been using my Switch in portable mode, and that's half because I'm too lazy to fucking plug it into my TV, but also it's the perfect size tablet screen where it's not too big, doesn't feel weird to like hold in your hands or anything. It's kind of like the ideal like size. I don't know, like I've only been playing it in portable mode, like so maybe that's like it's gonna be weird when Splatoon comes out, because I know I'm gonna be playing that a bunch, and I'm gonna be playing that portable, and I wonder if that will affect like how much I play that game or how much I enjoy it. Because with Overwatch, I'm always playing that on my TV, and that's like the other big multiplayer game that I'm into. So
do you think that it's like colored the way that you think about a game that you're playing on it, whether you're playing on TV mode or in handheld mode?
I mean, since I've been mostly playing like Zelda in portable mode, I guess that's not what I expected to do. Like because my boyfriend has a Switch and he has his dock out in our living room. So technically he's only playing on TV, and I'll be playing on the couch in portable mode. And So, I don't know.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of, like, the dichotomy between, like, people who are like, oh, that's a Netflix movie, or that's a movie I want to see in theaters. And I definitely find this with playing something like Zelda, where it's like, it definitely works as a handheld game, and that's like, I totally get it. But when you put it inside of the dock, the world just kind of opens up, and it feels like so much bigger, and it feels kind of like you're getting at this grander idea of what this game is supposed to be. Similar to how if you're watching like some kind of epic movie, and you're watching it on, like, you know, an old school iPod touch, or you're watching it like in theaters, like the way you experience the things are different there. And I think that Zelda kind of, I think personally, Zelda like plays better in the dock, just in terms of like kind of getting a sense of the vastness of this world. But something like Shovel Knight is, you play it and it feels very similar on both platforms. Like it's very, like you're still working with the single screen. You're not like seeing more draw distance. Like you're not seeing further into the background. It's still very much the same experience. So I think to your point, Josh, I'm really interested to see if like games start coming with, like, recommended, they're like, this game should be played in the dock, like it looks better in the dock. And then how much developers even able to advocate for that. I know there's already games that are like portable only.
Villas is portable only.
So if they're going to do the opposite, where they're like, this game needs to be played in the dock. But I think part of me feels like that probably won't be the case, because the whole point of the console is that it can go on the go. So it seems that it would be a mandate where if you're on the TV, it's a better experience, just like if you go to the theater, a movie is a better experience. But if you're playing portable, it'll still work just as well.
And also, I want to talk about this really quickly, because I got snipper clips, and you guys, as far as I know, haven't really played it. Kyle, you played a little bit of the demo. Yep. But everyone, when that first trailer for the Switch came out, when they first announced it, people were making fun of, like, oh, this chick's bringing her Switch to, like, her friend's party, and they're playing. Like, are you? No one's ever going to do that stuff. Like, and I thought that was really funny, because I didn't think that was a realistic way for it to be used either, but I have brought the Switch to someone else's place. Granted, it wasn't in like a party scenario like that.
It wasn't like, but... like a Brooklyn rooftop.
I went to a party.
Drinking craft beers.
Popping the bubbly. No. It was a much more casual setting and environment. But you like, they're like, hey, bring the Switch. Like, let's try it out. And you take the two Joy-Cons out, you give one to the person. They're extremely unwieldy and shitty to hold in your hands. But when you're playing a game like Snipper Clips, it doesn't really matter, because the control scheme is so damn simple. And within 5 minutes, you're at the core of what everything you want out of Snipper Clips, this co-op game, which is usually so difficult. Like, couch co-op. Remember a year ago when couch co-op was like, couch co-op is dead. It's like the hardest thing to do ever. It's not couch co-op anymore. You can bring it to someone else's place. You don't have to worry about this shit anymore, because the Switch is such a portable console. It's just, I don't know. I see a lot of potential in it. And I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked either. It's really neat. I think this could be the birth of a new generation of really good co-op games.
It's like couch surfing co-op.
Oh my god, Kyle.
I want to push back on the simplicity of Snipper Clips, and because my parents were in town this past weekend, and I was like, I want to play Snipper Clips with my family. It looks really fun. I've heard good things about it. And like, giving my parents the controllers, like, as small as they are, like, they're already unwieldy to some degree, but the idea of like control and controllers clicking into place for people is just still like not a thing. Like, the notion of like an analog stick and like four buttons in the cardinal directions, to people that don't know that, it's still just like crazy. Like, my mom, she was dealing, and my dad were dealing with like trying to figure out, okay, I've got four buttons on my right finger, and then I've got two shoulder buttons that also rotate, and I got the stick that also moves me, but how do I, am I supposed to do them at the same time? It's like the mental mapping, I think, is innate to some degree. So I am actually glad that Nintendo doesn't seem to be leaning too much into using the Joy-Cons as traditional controllers, like as the case with like 1-2 Switch, which is just all bets are off with how that game controls from like minigame to minigame. Like, I was playing with some dude at the Nintendo store last week as well. They're like at a 1-2 Switch demo booth, and me and him were just like milking cows together, which is like a very natural motion and doesn't rely on like having sort of dexterity that Snipper Clips requires. And like, we were just playing the demo of Snipper Clips, and it was still like getting that basketball into that hoop and like having to do like the spatio temporal alignment in your head about like, how am I supposed to rotate this? And you're supposed to jump, and I how do I jump again? And I'm supposed to like, that's like super difficult. So I am glad that like they're doing other stuff too.
That's like a video game problem. Not just
yeah, Switch yeah, no. I totally problem. Agree. But yeah, I guess,
like anyone saying, that's coming to video games that hasn't held a controller before is like, what the fuck is this thing?
Yeah. I guess that's what I'm arguing in favor of the fact that like, if like the Couch Surf co-op does exist, I'm glad that we've got like kind of weird motion control-y stuff that's also being launched with the Switch to potentially look at a future where it's not like, do you know how to move a thumbstick around? It could be like, have you milked a cow before? If yes,
they're providing both options.
Yeah. And I think that's super smart of them too, to like not forward that. And they're saying like, that's there if you want it, but also like use it like a normal controller.
I mean, the Wii was really the Wii sold so well, I think, because it was so accessible for so many different people. Like, my mom used to use it for, like, Wii Fit, and then my stepdad used it for this, like, Cabela's hunting game, where he, like, he put the Wiimote in this, like, really arbitrary fucking gun thing, and he goes hunting, and he would just enjoy virtual hunting, too, and then I was a pescatarian at that time, and he would give me shit for playing it, because I didn't eat meat, but I'd play this hunting game, and I was like, they're not, like, real animals, it's not the same thing.
But I feel like the GameCube was, like, the corporate, like, super strict dad, and then the Wii was, like, the hippie, the son who, like, becomes a hippie at age 20 as, like, a response that never really recovered. Except now the Switch is, like, somewhere in between. Like, two generations later, they finally figured out something that's sort of, like, in between with the two of them.
It's like a still feel like a millennial? That?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a millennial.
Another thing I wanted to say earlier is I actually went to a party maybe a weekend ago or the weekend before or something. And like multiple people brought their Switches. Like this wasn't like something that people thought about. It was just people had a tote bag and they were like, I brought my Switch. And then people played 1-2 Switch and it was a disaster because it was a fucking party. So you can't hear anything. But I can see that, like, in the future, like, maybe not 1-2 Switch per se, but, like, games like Snipperclips or easier games that might be better for, like Quiplash would be probably great on that, but I guess it's technically your phone, but...
Or, like, Pokemon? You know. Can you imagine, like, Switch Pokemon? You're just, like, taking
That's not, like, a co-op game. What?
No, not Smash like a co-op Brothers, game, though. but, like, taking your Switch out and, like, going to somebody's house and, like, trading? That seems like that would be so dope.
Mario Kart, Bubble Bobble... Once that shit comes out, Bomberman's already. I haven't
heard that's good. It's like $60, and it's like a Bomberman game.
I don't think a Bomberman game has ever been worth $60.
Yeah, never. I don't. And it just looks ugly. It's not like a nice looking game. But I guess
Tetris.
Oh yeah, Puyo Puyo Tetris is coming out soon.
Is that out already?
It's out in Japan, and it's coming out in the U.S. I think next month, which is weird. You can download the demo on the eShop already, I think.
Wasn't the Switch's stuff, like, not region-locked?
Yeah, you could technically buy it. I think it's in Japanese, though. I don't think it has the language option for English.
I mean, how much language do you need to play Tetris?
I mean, not much. I mean, there's, like, you know. I don't think so.
The usual level. For something like that, you know.
I mean, the menus, I guess. Like, but also, it's like, you have to already know how to, like, Puyo Puyo. Because that's kind of like a hard game to wrap your head around if you've never played Puyo Puyo before.
Is it Puyo Puyo or is it Tetris?
It's both. It's Puyo Puyo and Tetris.
You can't do that?
Yeah, you can. They did it.
Watch
what about Super Smash Bros. Mario Kart?
Super Smash Bros. Mario Kart. I'm down.
I don't really care about Smash Bros., so I wouldn't be down.
Hold on, what else are you guys playing, though? We just talked about the Switch for a long time.
I finished Nier Automata a few weeks ago. I a review on that on usgamer.net, but yeah, that game's really good, and it totally blindsided me, because I've never played a Nier game or a Dragon Guard game or really anything, and I kind of went into it being like, I guess I like Platinum, and this looks kind of cool, but it's really crazy in a great way, and in a way that games really aren't. Like, games don't really take risks, or they take risks in, like, a boring way, whereas Nier Automata takes risks in like a story way, in a mechanical way, in all these crazy ways. And yeah, that sounded really stupid. But it's really hard. It's also a really hard game to talk about without spoiling it for people. Because it's like, it's a game you play multiple times and every playthrough is different. And when I first heard that it was going to be a game I had to play multiple times, I was like, this is going to really suck. Like, I hate that. But it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it doesn't take that for granted. And it kind of knows that. It's like, okay, you're playing as something else this time, but there's also this change. So it's like, you're not doing the same thing. Like, you're seeing the same scenes again, but not the same. And then the third playthrough is basically like a sequel. And...
What?
Yeah, it's
okay. Okay. I feel like.
Hold on, guys. We gotta go into Katie's JRPG corner. Katie, like, what the hell is Nier Automata 2? Nier 2 Automata.
Okay, so Nier Automata. I should have established this game before I just start rambling about how crazy it is.
Too fast, too near.
It's a game where you are this android named 2B. She has a very short skirt. She has gray hair. She has a blindfold on, but she can see anyways. She also pilots a mech sometimes. And basically, like, the first line in the game is, oh, I need to, like, who's this god that, like, cast us with this cryptic puzzle, and when will we get the chance to kill him? And so, like, basically the whole, like, the setup is, like, this very intense, like, oh shit, like, these androids are pissed off. Like, they want to kill God. This is, like, some shit. And then you go through this abandoned factory, and then you fight the biggest fucking boss I've ever seen in my life. It's, like, basically the size of a building times two, and it looks like Big Shell from Metal Gear Solid 2, but just a boss. Like, you're just fighting Big Shell. And
what?
The game only gets more crazy from there. And it's like, a platinum game, so it's, like, a lot of sword fights, and then you also have, like, this pod that can shoot things. So you're, like, constantly shooting things, and then you're just, like, running around and slicing things up. And it's a JRPG, but it's more like a light JRPG. Like, you level up and your health goes up, but also you get these, like, chips that you can install into your, like, because you're an android, so they're chips. And they're just, like, abilities you can install into yourself. And that's kind of, like, the level of progression, but... And there's side missions, and it's, like, an open world, but it's not that big. So it's like a super light JRPG. It's more, or like action RPG would be more of a accurate description for it. And yeah, like the first playthrough would be like 15 hours, and then you finish it and it's like, oh, that was pretty good. That's some cool ideas. That's a good game with some good boss fights. But then there's like a note at the end that's like, oh, you've only seen like part of the game. You have to play through this multiple times to see like the whole story. And then you get thrown into it again, and it's like a whole different character you're playing as, and it's just like, and then it just gets way crazier from there. Like, part three is, it's kind of like a sequel in its own game. It's kind of like the first two playthroughs are like the prologue establishing these characters, and then playthrough three is like the real shit, and that's when shit gets real.
So it's like Gurren Lagann, the second half of that show.
Kind of, yeah. Like that would be actually. That would be a good comparison.
How many playthroughs are there?
So there's five endings, but at the end of playthrough three, you unlock a chapter select, so you just go to the point where it, like, diverges, and then once you see the two main endings for that third playthrough, you get the third ending, or the fifth ending.
Do you think the game gets, like, mileage out of the fact that you're playing over the same part again? Like, is the narrative, or like the way the game is playing, like the fact you're playing it again, does it speak to that? Like, it seems like a very like gamey type thing, but
yeah.
I feel like this game is one to kind of play with the fact that it knows that you're playing it again or something.
Yeah, it definitely, like, it doesn't take it your time for granted, because I think, yeah, like as I said, like when I first heard that it was gonna be like you play through multiple times, get every ending, I was just like, oh, this is gonna be like a terrible thing to do. But it really, like, you're playing as, like, in one, you're playing as, like, a different character, but that character also has their own, like, gameplay quirks, and it's, like, you're kind of, like, relearning how to play the game from this, like, different perspective in a way. And then there's, like, all these other things that pile up, and then narratively it just makes sense, too. And the second playthrough, I'd say, is the shortest of the three. Like, the third one's probably on par with the first one, and the first one's, like, 15 or so hours. But that's also doing a bunch of side shit, like I did.
I feel like... what Nier seems to understand about video games and the audience of video games is that it kind of doesn't matter how many risks you take as far as like storytelling and gameplay and stuff like that are concerned, as long as everything looks like dank. You know what I'm saying?
I'll need you to elaborate a little on dank.
I mean, you're playing as an android with a short skirt and a blindfold on who, like, uses a sword to chop shit up into little bitty pieces. Like, you could do whatever you want when you have that. And it's, like, Platinum, they can make I feel like they could insert the craziest mechanics and shit into their games. And as long as that, like, core loop of just, like, swirling around with swords in your hands is there, people won't care. They'll be like, this game is awesome, man. There's, like, a whole bunch of shit
Platinum's
that would never pass
made
a focus group.
Bad games recently, though. Like, they've done, like, a bunch of really, like, subpar licensed stuff, which is probably where the money's at, but, or they might have, like, an A-B team situation going on. Like, I'm not totally positive.
They did the Avatar game, right?
Yeah, they did, like, Avatar. They did, like, that Transformers game, and I feel like their last...
Dude, that Transformers game was tight!
Yeah, it was fine. It was Bayonetta, you know? Like, Bayonetta's
kind
of, like,
them.
The peak, or, like, Vanquish, and...
Yeah.
Did they do...
Rising Revengeance, it's, like...
The Wonderful
That's, like, playing in their wheelhouse, though. Oh, sorry, what?
Wonderful 101 or whatever. Was that them?
I don't...
No, that was
Kamiya. That was Kamiya, but I don't think it was Platinum. But, hold on. I feel like I should look this up. Gonna get called out. But yeah, I don't think Wonderful 101 was Platinum. I'm like...
Because it wasn't... I remember it being advertised as Platinum.
Well, they did, like, Metal Gear Rising.
Yeah, Metal Gear Rising.
Revengeance.
Bayonetta games. Vanquish. I'm still waiting for the fucking PC release.
Oh, it was
Vanquish,
Platinum.
Man.
That's weird. I did not know
more
that
like
was
Platinum. More like Dankwish.
Wonderful 101 is good.
That game owns, dude. That game is the best.
So good. I can't get over how good Vanquish is. Also, I can't get over the fact that it's just like... It's like... But it's Chugo City because it's still on a 360 and it's just like... It's gross to look at. In that way that all Platinum games just kind of gross to look at sometimes. But near,
anyway.
But no, like Nier looks like way like chiller than most Platinum games. Like most Platinum games are like all over the place, kind of like coming at you. And Nier seems like much more of like a kind of like somber, steadied game with like these bouts of crazy intensity.
Anyway, okay, let me elaborate here. The principle is not that everything Platinum touches is gold. The principle is that
it's
Ubisoft and all these companies that focus group everything into the ground and make the exact same game over and over again don't realize that you can do anything as long as it looks cool. Like, as long as you have cool shit in there. You know?
But I think Platinum is still playing to its, like, core competency, though. Like, the fact that you still look at it and, like, that's a Platinum game makes it seem like they've already kind
but
of, like, found this, like, niche.
Okay, but isn't that kind of mischaracterizing Nier? Because I feel like this is a Yoko Taro game that Platinum is, like, that he got... Platinum
I mean, from what I haven't played the first Nier, so I feel kind of out of my element discussing, I guess, if Nier, the first Nier is, like, good gameplay-wise or whatever. But from what I've, like, my research and, like, from what I understand, I've watched, like, the first Nier is, like, really clunky to play. It has, like, cool ideas and does these cool twists or whatever, just like Nier Automata does. But it's not, like, an enjoyable game to, like, physically play. Whereas Automata, it's, like, a Platinum game, so it's, like, polished and it's just, like, quick and fun and you know so like
just a quick little 30-hour jaunt.
Yeah, you know, this is quick. The blink of an eye and it's gone. It's like fun to play. It doesn't feel like I never felt like I was abhorring my time with it or anything. It's not as like involved as something like Bayonetta where you have to like know combos and like it's very in depth of an action game. It's definitely an the difficulty balance is also pretty off. Like, normal mode is way too easy and hard mode is way too hard. So it's like, I kind of wish there was an in-between. But it's fun to play. It's enjoyable. There's stuff you can upgrade. It's an action RPG, like, made by Platinum.
Yeah.
This sounds like
I definitely
want to
check it out.
My alley. Yeah, I need to play this, like, yesterday. Cause
yeah.
I'm a Kingdom Hearts boy. I'm a Kingdom Hearts fuck boy.
Oh, it's way better than Kingdom Hearts. Holy shit.
I know.
Kingdom
sure
Hearts is like the weak shit. This is like what you play when you grow up.
Yeah.
But you still love Kingdom Hearts deep down.
It's me. I'm the grown-up who liked Kingdom Hearts. I have also... Well, is there anything... I don't know. Are there any other games that...
That's pretty much like all I've been playing, aside from games I can't talk about yet.
Because I'm trying to talk about Breath of the Wild. I'm trying to talk about some Breath of the Wild.
Okay,
dude, I think before you talk about Breath of the Wild, though, we should take a little break.
All right, we'll take a little break, and when we get back, we'll talk about some Breath of the Wild. All right, see ya.
I feel like Breath of the Wild is one of like top game all time status.
I think it's like let's start a little bit lower here. We got
take it back a little bit. Take it back a little bit.
Take a couple steps back.
Dial it in.
Okay, everyone. Okay, it's been a little while since this game has been released, and there's some backlash, as is to be expected. You know, people are out of the honeymoon phase. They're seeing, all the shrines are designed the same. There's loading times, and there's a...
The world isn't infinite.
Yeah, exactly. It's not actually infinite, all that stuff. I get that. And there's a lot of legit complaints. The weapon durability stuff gets a little annoying. The farming shit that's really been getting on my nerves a little bit is, like, there's really some really bullshit farming in this game. I'm not going to lie to you. But... It's like every game is going to have its little things you're going to have to quibble with. There's no perfect game, period. Every like greatest game of all time has its flaws, and a lot of them have. Dude, if you ever have gone back and tried to play Shadow of the Colossus, it is awful. Like the so gameness itself, it's so janky. It's so janky, dude. Like. You'll try to get to like a boss area and it's the worst thing ever because it's so difficult to control the character. It's so finicky. The frame rates are awful. There's a lot of stuff to quibble with about that game, but people aren't looking at that 10 years from now. They're looking at what is the thing that this introduced? What is the legacy? What is the main loop? And for me, Breath of the Wild, its sense of traversal and the sense of genuine discovery that it gives you is just... It's never been done to this extent, in my opinion, and I've never felt the sense of discovery that this game gives to me. I don't know if you have the same feelings on that, Kyle, but that's where I stand.
I think the biggest thing for me to like elaborate on that point a little bit is the fact that it feels not like a game that's like it's not just a game that's massive in the sense that like. Whatever the first, like Daggerfall. Like Daggerfall was like one of the biggest, you know, virtual worlds ever created. It's this massive world. But it also got there in the same way No Man's Sky gets there, which is that it's just procedurally generated stuff, like back to back to back to back to back. And so you could feasibly just do a lot of it, but it's all the same. And with Breath of the Wild, where it gets me is the fact that I keep like pushing the world in these different directions where it's like, I'm going to climb up the side of this mountain, even though I'm not supposed to. And then I'm going to go chop this tree down and like all this stuff in the game, like gives back to you. Even if it's just like getting a Korok seed or something, it's the fact that you can feel like you can traverse these ways that are like both, even if it's not like on like, you know, the proverbial path or something, it feels like even if you're going off path and you're going to those like really gamery areas, like you're like, oh, I'm not going to climb up the waterfall. I'm going to go behind the waterfall. Like there's always something there. So you're just running across this like massive landscape and you're just like, you're playing how you want to play and you're doing what you want to do. And the game seems to constantly be giving back to you and saying, not necessarily good job or like you did it, but the fact that it acknowledges the fact that you'll be exploring the game and it doesn't really ever like let up in that sense. So even if you're just getting a Korok seed or something, it always feels like there's something kind of there for you. Even if it's not like marked on your map and it's like, you got to go here. And I've seen so much, the most interesting stuff I've seen in the game has like not been marked on my map. And I've just kind of run across it because I've been avoiding the main quest for 20 hours. And that's super interesting.
Yeah, I think you're getting at something. Well, I feel like you have this reflex, or at least I do, when I'm playing a big game like this where the first thing I want to do is kind of like find where the boundary is or where the limit is. So in Skyrim, I'll be like, oh, I can climb that mountain. That's cool. And then I'll just walk up to it and just be like, maybe I can just climb up the face of this cliff. And it's like, it just doesn't let you do that because it wants you to go up this path. And then you're like, all right, well, that's kind of bullshit then. Like, it doesn't actually want me to do this. It's not giving this to me. It's just there so I can look at it. But it's something that they're trying to design around so that they can corral me into this one set pathway. But when you try to look for a boundary in Breath of the Wild, it's just like, the game's just like, there's no boundary. Just keep going. There's just more shit. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And when you actually do keep going, you're like, I've missed so much stuff. I have to turn around and look. Like, you get exhausted of trying to look for some edge of this world because you're just not really going to find it. I have found a couple, but there's so much more. There's so much more within the world that it doesn't feel like a boundary. And I was talking about this with Matt Margini, another colleague, peer of ours, who we're just talking about how thinking about the fact that this world is finite because it doesn't give you that sense that there is some sort of boundary right off the bat, like a lot of these other so-called adventure games do. When you think about the fact that it does end somewhere, it's like anxiety inducing. It's like it's hard to even fathom that this thing is finite, because the way the world presents itself and the way the world looks and feels while you're actually playing it feels like it's boundless.
No, yeah, I think something that's always pushed me away from games like Skyrim or even like games like Far Cry, where it's like they pretty much just throw you in a world and they're like, make your own fun. And I kind of hate that because I'm same with like Minecraft and stuff. Like, I'm the type of player that wants to be guided. Like, I want like a very curated experience. I'm not really into procedurally generated things mostly. And Breath of the Wild, like when they first were saying, oh, it's gonna be an open world game kind of like Skyrim, that just like made me upset. Like, I was like, I don't want that. Like, that's not the type of game I want from a Zelda game. But playing it, it's not that. It kind of takes those ideas, but it rewards you. So it's like, yeah, you can actually climb that mountain and there might be something at the top, or you just have a better vantage point and you can find these and you can see this thing you couldn't see before, and you're more rewarded for being kind of experimental in how you play it, rather than with like a game like Skyrim where it's just like nothing. It's just like more boring shit. I don't know.
I definitely remember that, because when the trailer first came out, I definitely remember like ragging on it pretty hard to my friends and being like, this is not like, what, come on, like, come on, Nintendo. They were just showing like, it was like pretty nice, but it was like super empty landscapes, everything. I mean, if there is a complaint to say about Breath of the Wild, is that like some of the environments can look kind of samey. But that's only inside of different provinces, only inside of a given province. Like, for the most part, different provinces look very different. And I think they were still trying to like stay on that like initial plateau. And you're like, I don't know, it's not.
Yeah.
And then like I watched, I guess it was Polygon put up this gameplay video of like 25 minutes of gameplay. And I was like, oh shit, this is like something different. and then the fact that like Nintendo has just like not said anything about like most of this game. And that you're still just like finding all this stuff that's in this game that, I mean, I remember when Twilight Princess was coming out for like 6 years and Nintendo Power like ran every fucking story on that game, like six ways to Sunday, where I felt like by the time it came out, I like knew what that game was. And this is just the total opposite, where they're like, here's some stuff that happens in this game and it's open world. And then like every single day, like I'm playing it, my girlfriend is playing it, I know like Josh, you're playing it, we've talked about it. Is like people are saying the stuff that's in this game. It's like, what? Like it goes beyond just being like cool for a Zelda game. It's just like, this is just cool stuff that's just in this game, and you might not ever find it. And it's just kind of like hanging around. And there's so much stuff going on. And the fact that, and I think this is what you're getting at too in terms of talking about boundaries, is that you're trying to find these like limits of things that, like, oh, where's the game gonna stop giving something to me? Like when I got my first like, you know, above 20 weapon, I was like, this is it, this is the best sword I'm ever gonna get. And that's just not the case. Like, this, it's just constantly. So I can see how when you do eventually crest that point, you'll be like, oh, it's over, and I can understand sadness there. But in terms of getting there and also just exploring everything else that the game is so exciting and so rewarding. And also, I like really fucking hated the first Zelda game, so I have no nostalgia for like all the wavy hand stuff that people say about that game. But this totally just gets at this like beautiful idea of exploration.
Have you never liked a Zelda game before this? Like, never?
Oh, no, no. I've been like a huge fan of Zelda. I have played like all the Zelda games besides Skyward Sword.
Skyward Sword sucks.
One of the things that they had talked about in that GDC talk, or maybe it wasn't in the GDC talk, but like a separate interview, but they were talking about how, yeah, they made this physics system, but they also made this like, quote, chemistry engine of like how things interact with each other. And I think that that's one really important part of the exploration in this game. And it's something that games like Metal Gear Solid have done really well in the past, where it's like, oh, did you know if you hold, like in Metal Gear Solid 2, one of the big things was, did you know if you hold, you know, your gun up to a dude, he'll put his hands up, and if you hold it up long enough, he'll shake, and then his, you know, some ammunition will come out, or a ration will come out, or he'll piss his pants, or something like that. Those types of interactions are super underrated in these types of games, because I feel like they have this sort of, it's like an exponential effect where if you put even one of those and someone finds it, they're like, this is, you can do anything. You can put your gun, like the one thing that they let you do in Metal Gear Solid that is not like something that is within the rigid system. People are like, did you know you could do this in Metal Gear Solid? And I feel like the more you have of those, the more fleshed out the world feels. And if you have like 100, 200 of those interactions, the world starts feeling like an actual interactive thing. And that's one thing that I think that Nintendo has done really well with Breath of the Wild, where the whole, like, if you're wearing a fire rod, when you go into an icy area, you will stay warm. Or if you are, if you have a metallic object on you, when there's a thunderstorm outside, you'll get hurt or something like that. All of those little interactions, they add so much. They have such a massive impact on how the world feels as a place to adventure in, and a place that feels like real and something worth exploring, because it just feels way more fleshed out. And there is really a finite amount of those things within the game. But the way that they work, there's just enough of them to be freaking awesome. And I feel like maybe in the DLC that comes out later, they'll introduce some more of those things. They'll get that stuff cranked up even more. And that's something that I think would be really interesting to see those kind of mechanics ramp up even further than they already are.
I think there's definitely also, I know there's like somewhat of a precedent for this, because I know Spelunky did something similar. Mm. They didn't call it like a chemistry engine. But it boils down to this idea in programming of a thing called interface, which is like, basically, if you're a person, you're not only a person, you're a person that has these certain characteristics. So in like Spelunky, it's like, it's not just a ball. It's a ball that is like sticky and heavy and blah, 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 blah. And I think that Zelda is doing something similar, where it's like, it's not just a torch. It's a torch that like has heat and gives off heat and attracts this and doesn't attract this. And they kind of just stack these things on so that they don't actually have to plan for any sorts of like discrete interactions. It's all based around this emergent interaction where like, if you walk somewhere, some like if statement fires off where it's like, if you're holding a thing that mm-hmm. gives off heat, then do this to this thing. And I think the fact that I think in Spelunky it can feel very designed in a certain way. We're like really kind of abusing these interactions. But I would actually say that in Breath of the Wild, because they're definitely limited to some degree, but they're also very natural. It feels like you're kind of just, it feels much more like of a world. It's not like, oh, if I attach the torch to the sticky thing and throw it to the thing that melts, and then I can, like, that doesn't feel like, I mean, Spelunky is very much a different game from Breath of the Wild, so I think there's a point to that stuff. But I think the way it's up in Breath of the Wild, it doesn't seem so kind of in your face. It just really gives this degree of verisimilitude to the world. Like, when I could first chop down a tree, it like, blew my fucking mind.
Yeah,
that I could interact with the Zelda game in this way.
Just the idea of having ingenuity within a preset system is something that I think is really novel. Just allowing for people to come up with their own solutions to things that are pretty heavily designed. Like the first time I saw someone solve those like electricity puzzles by just like, instead of using the ball, like the metallic balls they give you in the shrine, they like use the metallic weapons and just lay them end to end to like solve electricity puzzles. Yeah, it's like stuff that they actually let you do. It's really neat. But it's just, you can see human ingenuity at work in this in a game is kind of novel and interesting. Interesting, bad word. We should abolish it.
We should ban that, have like a tip jar or like a swear jar for anytime anyone says interesting.
Does anybody have any bad stuff to say about this game?
I mean, so I feel like my opinion here might be taken with a grain of salt because I've only played about 10 hours because I have been reviewing a bunch of games. I've just been really busy. So while everyone else is playing Breath of the Wild, having a great old time, I'm fucking playing all these other games. And I'm about like 10 hours in. I'm really like, I'm enjoying my time with it for the reasons all of you have been saying, and I'm enjoying it way more than I expected I would. But I think it doesn't quite feel like a Zelda game. Like, one of my favorite Zelda games is Twilight Princess, which is a very controversial statement.
Yeah, what? I've heard.
Because, I think Breath of the Wild captures the sense of adventure really well, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like an adventure for Link. It's just like an adventure. Twilight Princess is a, like, when Nintendo was, promoting Breath of the Wild, they were like, this is gonna be, like, a big open world game. This is our first open world game. It's kind of, like, how they're marketing it. But I also feel like Twilight Princess was almost, like, their first open world game. Like, it was, like, this vast version of Hyrule that you can experience from two different perspectives, from the perspective of Wolf Link and regular Link. And that game's really has really excellent dungeons, which Breath of the Wild doesn't. Like, it has four dungeons, and they're all kind of the same in a way. And then there's just, like, all those little shrines, which are fine. Like, they're great. Like, I enjoy those. I'm not, like, knocking on any of those, because they're still well-designed things. But I just feel like it's missing that kind of, like, thread, that, like, kind of narrative thread, because, like, the story's so buried. It's like you have to go and find all these memories, or you can skip them all together if you don't want any story, which is fine. I mean, that's good that they offer that freedom for players, but yeah, I don't know. I it's grabbing me, but it's not grabbing me as much as, like, Twilight Princess did, or, like, A Link Between Worlds did, or A Link to the Past, or any of these other Zelda games that I really love. Or Majora's Mask, which is another great one.
I think I definitely hear your point, but I think picking Twilight Princess is probably the craziest part about it.
Here's the thing to back that up. I played Twilight Princess around the same time I played Okami. Okami is actually the greatest. That's the greatest Zelda game ever made, even though it's not a Zelda game. Like, Okami is fucking amazing. Playing Okami made me feel like I just want to play as a wolf more, which is like a dumb thing to like, which is a dumb way to, I guess, justify that. But it's kind of like playing as like Amaterasu is pretty cool. I just want to play as that more. And then Twilight Princess is like, here you go. Here's a wolf to run around as.
A waggle wolf too.
And I like Midna. I think Midna's like a really charming character.
Midna is dang. That's true.
Yeah. I really like Midna. Midna like, puts a, like, I mean, the Zelda games are all really well written and they're really snarky and fun, but I think Midna's like the first like real character in that series.
Wait, Zelda's besides, not like, a character?
Well, I mean, Zelda's a character. I mean, I don't know.
No, Zelda's a very two-dimensional.
I mean, I feel like she's more three-dimensional in, like, Ocarina of Time, but it's like in most Zelda games she's not really around.
Definitely feel like this game does not have very much personality, and part of that is because the voice acting.
I think it's another thing that's off-putting. It's so bad.
Oh.
If the voice acting was good, it would be. I feel like honestly, I would be way more into it. But all the voice acting I've encountered so far just like makes me roll my eyes. I don't know why Zelda has like this weird accent. It's just like. And Link's kind of a dick. Like, Zelda's, like, suffering all the time, and Link's just, like, not caring. And all the memories, he's just, like, not doing anything. I'm like, Link's an asshole. Poor Zelda's here is, like, suffering, and she has all this, like, burden of, like, this legacy and knowing, like, their fate and everything. And then Link's just like,
especially because everyone like, else talks and you get dialogue options. Like, you can get things to say. It's like,
he's kind of a smartass, which is like,
It's funny. Yeah, his writing is actually kind of funny, but the voice acting is, it's atrocious, dude. It's like,
I wish it was just no voice acting. Like, like the old games, it's better that way.
Have you done
the, or just like minimal voice acting?
Have you done the Zora thing yet? The Zora area?
Dude, that's like, that's the main stuff that I've done.
Dude, Mipha?
I've gotten to that area, but I haven't done anything there.
Her delivery is always exactly the same.
So bad.
Mipha's grace is ready. Leave. You must save us.
There's also the Goron one, unsurprisingly.
I liked you.
Also terrible. Just, they're all terrible all the time. It sounds like
they
Saturday noon cartoon special.
Yeah, they sound like really bad dubs from, like, not even the 90s, but, like, the 80s.
It's
just, like, really corny and just, like, they just pulled people off the street.
No, it's like Nintendo of America was like, yo, guys, we gotta get on the Zelda game. We don't have any more money. We can't hire voice actors. But, yo, Reggie, you wanna get on this track real fast?
Get on this track, Reggie. Spin a
so bad.
The first dude you meet on the plateau, the king guy, he sounds like fucking Deckard Cain, low rent Deckard Cain dude. He's like, I'm an old man. Just like a teenager doing like old man voice.
It doesn't set, especially when he narrates that whole tale, like explaining everything. It's like, oh, is this what I'm in for? And then it's like, yeah, that's what you're for. Like, there's definitely a handful of decent voice acting, but not, it's thin.
It's like a very small hand.
Yeah. It's like
the Koroks though. Small. I want to say the Korok area. Whenever you guys get there, it's the best. It's more personality than game gives you usually. And it's the best. It's like, I love those little dudes.
I just want to step back though and hear more about real quick. Why Twilight Princess is like the best design Zelda game, because that's,
I'm not saying it's the best design. Like, Link to the Past is the best design.
Also untrue.
Like, or what?
No, Link to the Past.
Link to the Past is so good.
I think I will give you
Link
Between
that,
Worlds is actually,
that's
really
a fine
good
opinion to have. In my opinion.
I think a lot of people have that opinion.
Yeah,
Link to
I think
the Past is the best Zelda game. Like, for like 100%.
Are we gonna pivot on the opinion now? Because I don't think Link to the Past is that great. The whole like light world, dark world thing is just doesn't work for me.
No, her opinion isn't. Her opinion isn't that Twilight Princess is the best Zelda. It's that she thinks it's better than Breath of the Wild.
I mean, I wouldn't even put that claim out there because I haven't played enough of Breath of the Wild, I think, to make that fair statement. I think where I'm at right now in the narrative, in the game, 10 hours in, I was more drawn to Twilight Princess. Pulled me in more.
Kay's like, listen, no wolves. I don't know. It's not great.
You can get Wolf Link in.
Midna returns.
But you're not playing as
there's
Wolf
a
Link.
Twilight
he's just
Zone.
There. Oh, yeah. And he can die. Like,
that sounds like a spoiler, man. I didn't know that.
You need the amiibo.
What,
it's
Wolf
an amiibo.
Link? The amiibo. Yeah.
You just put him on there and he gets into your game?
Yeah. He's just there as your buddy. You know, he just runs around.
Can I just say one real thing really quick about the Koroks really quick? This is a little bit of a spoiler alert about a really cute fucking thing that nobody
spoiler
has pointed out. It's not really a spoiler, but you go into the Korok village and there's a shop and there's a Korok. Dude, this little fucking Korok just floating there, and he owns a shop. And one of the items he sells one apple. It's just one apple by itself. You know how you can see like all the things that they sell.
Need
like
a major spoiler alert, dude. Major spoiler alert.
That was not a spoiler.
It's the cutest
it's like,
thing
he's got
ever
a shop.
No,
he sells
like,
stuff.
Dude, I saw that shit and I was about to like, I was like, this is the cutest thing I ever seen.
You're like, call your, you're like, call your mom. You're like, mom, I love you. Just gotta let you know.
He has an apple.
Dude, I did. I'm not gonna lie though. I totally lost my shit the first time I saw that you could buy stuff and it disappears from the stand. I was like, "It's actually in the store and you can buy it and
yeah,
it goes
it's like
away."
A physical item that's there.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And like the fact that like you basically just walk into like the Forever 21 of Kakariko Village and you're like, "What's up?" Trying to get some new digs.
And it's not Forever 21 prices. That shit's pricey.
That is expensive.
That's true. More like.
That's more
like.
Uniqlo of
Anthropology Topshop style.
Anthropology is like a
Topshop. It's definitely Topshop.
The Free People, or what is it? Free. What is that store?
It's Free People. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Free People.
Yeah.
I definitely want some like new doper digs. I've been running around in the Zora armor for like way too long. I need to go.
So explore. My boyfriend's really far. Like he's beat Ganon and he's like done so. He has like everything, whatever. And he's still playing. Like he's trying to like 100% the shrines. And he got like an outfit that makes him look like Dark Link, which is really dope. Yeah, like his eyes are yellow. He's like
what?
He looks like scary. He's Dark Link. And also, he has a thing where he looks like a skeleton, and it glows in the dark.
That thing sucks.
It's crazy.
It's way too expensive.
It looks really cool, though.
It does.
Definitely trying to play like Fashion Link, because it's like in normal Zelda games, you get like three outfits, and they're just like palette swaps.
I love clothes in RPGs.
I know. Too. It's like the fact that it changes.
It's the
underrated.
Best.
And also, like the fact here underrated. That they're not like they're all designed for like the body. It's not like. It's just like it's a T-pose model, and it's like now it's a different shirt, like World of Warcraft or something. It feels like when you put these things on, you're like wearing this outfit, and it has so much interaction with your body, and it like changes how you sound when you move, like all this stuff. It just makes you want to. I really want to like just 100% this game because I just love like everything about that and everything else in the game.
That was like 80% of my love for World of Warcraft. Not gonna lie, is like when you put something on, you see your outfit change, you're like. Yes, and then when you get like those shoulders that are like on fire, you're like, "Oh my god, I'm wearing it! This came from a dragon."
Mom, do you see this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I call my mom like every time I get a new outfit. In the game. I'm like, "Mom, you have to see this. I look so cool right now." And then she's like, "I literally don't care." Right. I mean, that's also like the appeal of like Overwatch. It's like.
Oh,
you know, skins. Outfits.
That's yeah. true.
That's
true.
Pretty the only appeal of playing Overwatch. Like, you can get a dope skin or highlight intro or, like, your 50th useless spray. And that's, like, the only
reward. I have this Roadhog spray that came with the, like, during the Olympic thing where it's, like, Roadhog doing, like, a diving belly flop.
Oh, I have that where he's, like, belly flopping, yeah.
Yeah, I did it the other day, and, like, all the people I played with were like, that's the best Roadhog thing ever! And I was like, oh, yeah, totally. I thought it was kind of dumb when I first got it, but I got compliments, so I was like, all right, I feel validated.
Here, I'm gonna milk this now.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty...
Like, yo, chill it with the spray, dude. Chill
one of many. One of many sprays I got.
That's like I'm so proud of my Rocket League like Christmas shit that I got last year.
Oh, the gifts!
I got the ho yeah. ho sound, the ho ho ho. Every time you go around, yeah. It's like not gonna change that.
No matter what time of the year, you always have that dude, shit.
It's Christmas every year. I play Rocket League every day.
Every year,
yeah.
Every year it's Christmas.
Just drop a presents on him.
Every December, yeah. To be exact, yeah.
No, like, so with the Overwatch skins in particular, we totally got off topic, but whatever. So with the Overwatch skins, even though, like, the Christmas ones, like, when the holiday event was over, I fucking took that shit off. I was like, it's not Christmas anymore, I'm not celebrating this. But, like, with the Halloween ones, I've kept those on still. And it's, like, weird that I've, like, determined that Christmas is unworthy of being shown off all year long. Except for Torbjorn, because he has the best skin. But
maybe you know, you're just trying to make Christmas more special when it rolls around, and then when you put the outfit on, you're just not trying to minimize the value of Christmas time, the most wonderful time of the year.
This is true though. But I die for seasonal content. Like I just love it. So Overwatch kind of kills me because they're just like popping out every month, and I'm not ready for that many seasons.
Yeah.
But like I'm definitely like as soon as Thanksgiving is over, it's like put on the Sufjan Stevens Christmas albums. Download the train simulator Christmas train pack. It's like get the snow mod for Euro Truck Simulator. So I'm like so there, and I'm just trying to.
You're like ready for.
I'm just like ready to go.
He comes out like in his whitey tighties like on Christmas morning.
No, dude, Thanksgiving Day. After Thanksgiving, I'm just like only wearing Christmas underwear.
Only drinking like peppermint hot cocoa. And stuff. Like all assets of your life are Christmas. Nothing.
I wonder, dude, if Zelda gets seasonal content, I will probably die. Like, if you can,
I mean,
like,
they're getting a DLC,
Christmas
right?
Like they listed it though on the website. It doesn't sound like it's going. I don't know. It sounds very vague, and I'm I'm like really excited, but I'm kind of worried it's not going to be a lot.
The first pack is pretty much not, like, there's a hard mode or something. I don't even remember what it was. But then the second DLC pack is a new story. So it's like a new little, I don't know how meaty the story or campaign or whatever is going to be.
And Dark World.
A few other things. That would pull me back in so much.
What if they're like, Wolfling?
I mean, but it kind of already is Dark World. Like, Calamity Ganon's fucking rolling.
Yeah, it's super post-apocalyptic.
Guardians are crawling.
That's true.
Yeah, it's already kind of like the Dark World rolled in a way.
I also love the name Calamity Ganon, which I feel like doesn't get enough love.
Yeah.
That's such a dope name for like a crazy force.
Yeah.
And like no one's acknowledging the fact that it's got like some adverb.
Calamity Ganon. No, yeah. And I think that the design of like that, all the evil stuff is really cool. Like the guardians look really scary. And like when that music starts up, it's like the most terrifying thing in the world. Especially for me, because I'm a really low level Link right now. So it's like I hear a guardian and I'm like, I need to get the fuck out of here. There's no way I can face this. Scary. It's so scary.
I haven't even thought about the end.
It is
game
so nice
stuff,
to see them.
To be honest, like, I haven't even thought about like what Ganon is. Like, is Ganon a person? Don't spoil this for me, please. But it's like I've been adventuring so much. It's like I'm not even thinking about the fact that Zelda has been, she's been in there for 100 years.
Zelda's literally been holding off Calamity Ganon for 100 years while Link was like taking a nap. Like that makes me so mad to think about. Like
Link's like,
Zelda's
listen,
out
listen,
here
like,
doing work, and then Link's like, I'm just
Link's
gonna
like,
nap for like.
I gotta
100
get these 900 Korok seeds, babe. Can you wait for a second?
It's so.
Hold up.
It makes me so mad. Like I feel bad for Zelda. Like she's just, you know, she has such a tragic life, and Link just doesn't care, and he's just napping until he's like alive again, and then he's like. Okay, I guess I'm gonna like diddle daddle and spend like hundreds of hours doing all this other shit before saving you. Not even saving, it's like helping you out. Like,
Zelda's like looking at a heat map of Link running around Hyrule, just like running around the castle. Yeah. She's like, what are you doing?
He's in Kakariko Village.
Zelda's like, come on.
He's in Kakariko Village trying to save the world, and then some dude's like, I need help finding my 10 chickens. He looks toward Hyrule Castle. He looks back at the guy who needs help with his chickens. He's like, you know what? I got half an hour to help you out with your chickens, bro.
Yeah. What I was doing that mission, speaking of that mission, there was a Kuko and this person's like little guardian, and there's this lady there. And she was just yelling at me every time I tried to get in there to get it.
Oh, the plum trees.
And I like bombed and the plum trees. I destroyed all her trees. She was really upset that
you just
I destroyed
bombed
all her
the
trees.
What?
I was trying to get the Kuko to like fly out of there. Kuko is not flying out of there. He was just chilling. And I was like, there's no way I can get him out here. So I got to scare him off. He did not get scared off. I destroyed this lady's like, basically her like the way she survives because she's like a. She has a plum tree garden.
And
she was
like,
devastated. She was so mad at me. She was like, my plum trees are gone. And I was like,
that's
some
real shit.
I just want
the
Kuko. And then I still tried to go in there and she would still yell at me about it. And I was like, this is stupid. And then I went and stayed in that like inn or whatever, like a few nights. And she would still be there. And then one night she was not there. So I like went and took it and I completed that mission.
Yeah, it's just like, I think she's just not there at night. And you gotta blow her trees
out. I literally spent like an hour trying and just like getting frustrated. And then I was like, okay, I need to rest. And then she'd still be there.
One of her
like,
10
this is
hours.
Literally, it is such bullshit.
I'm going to bomb your trees then.
But the happy ending was that I did it. And then I.
Did the husband ever catch
that
you?
That guy is a.
Because I was in there. I landed in there. And then the husband was walking by and he was like, oh, excuse me, my wife really doesn't like to have people in here. Like,
what the fuck?
Yeah.
That's fucked up. That's so stupid.
He's like,
dude, I was so sad because I was.
Fuck her
I was
plum
like,
tree. She doesn't deserve them. That's why I blew him up.
I was definitely hoping after that mission that I was going to get, like, a chicken hat. And I was just going to wear that the whole game. And I did not get it. And I know there's like other monster hats in the game, and I'm just like really hoping
the
for
monster
a chicken.
Hats are really cute. From
I know.
Saying.
Wouldn't
so
a chicken
cute.
One be so dope? I mean, it might be in the game. I have no idea. I'm definitely seeking that out.
To anyone listening to this who hasn't played Zelda yet, don't do the cuckoo thing. It's like they give you like 30 rupees. It's bullshit. Don't
yeah,
bother.
It's not worth it.
It takes so long.
You don't get a chicken hat. You can blow up the trees.
Not worth.
You could be the hero of Hyrule. That's, dude, another crazy thing about this game that, again, Nintendo just said, like, nothing about is the fact that all the people have actual day-night cycles and, like, the stuff that they do.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, in Zoro's Domain, and this dude, like, wakes up and goes, like, hangs out with his kids, and he, like, goes down to stand on guard, and then he goes and does something else. Just no indication that that actually happens, besides the fact that it's like, oh, it's a world, it should act like a world.
Right.
And it plays such a crucial role to doing a lot of tasks in the game. And the fact that there's no, like, real indication of what time it is anywhere, like Majora's Mask or something, just, like, blew my mind. It's like, oh, man, this game, they're, like, people are just doing stuff, and they're out, and they've got different things to do at different times, and you've got to know where they're at.
Well, like, also, they'll respond to you, like, if it's raining, they'll be like, oh, I hate the rain. Like, they'll stand underneath the shade, their cycles will break. Like, if you're not wearing a shirt, they'll talk to you differently. Like, it's nuts. If you're wearing the costume, the Gerudo female costume, they'll talk to you differently. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's like the amount of love they put into this game to just flesh out all those areas it's astounding. It's like astounding in the same way The Witcher 3 is astounding, where it's like, love. Man, they spent so much time doing all this stuff. And it makes, like, because there's, like, these kind of vast swaths of territory between those little villages, it feels like they can really focus their efforts on those villages and let that, like, emergent stuff, like the chemistry engine you were talking about, happen in between to kind of fill in the gaps. So it feels like you get this kind of very consistent narrative, dramatic experience across playing the game, even if they're not, like, doing something like The Witcher had to do, which was, like, put people everywhere and everybody's talking all the time. Mm-hmm. They put much more focus on, like, very micro interactions and, like, kind of painting in broader strokes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I feel like we can end this now.
Yeah. You guys, if people listening to this have not played Breath of the Wild, I recommend playing it as fast as possible. Well, not as fast as possible, but getting it and playing it as soon as possible, because it's incredible.
I can wrap up a little bit. We are Bad End Podcast. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'll put a link into the thing below because we haven't actually made the Twitter yet. actually, what's really good for a first episode, though, is if you rate us and review us on iTunes. That would be a huge help to us. Please just help us get the word out about the show if you liked what you heard. Tweet about us, all that stuff. We'll give you the resources to do so to share us out. But thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Yeah.